Hi, my name is Charlotte Burney, and I'm a 17-year-old attending the Ethical Culture Fieldston School in New York City. My goal is to explore the nationwide anxiety epidemic by hearing from authors, specialists, and educators. This is A is for Anxiety.
Today, I'm lucky to speak with both Chris Bradford and Mandisa Mtembu. Chris Bradford is one of the founders of the African Leadership Academy, a pan-African boarding school seeking to create leaders on the African continent. He has a hybrid background in business and education from his work in Boston Consulting Group and teaching experience at the Ondale School. It was there that he developed a deep interest in the design of educational institutions and the power they have to shape societies. At the African Leadership Academy, Mr. Bradford has worked to create their innovative curriculum, including African studies and entrepreneurial leadership. Ms. Mtembu is the head of wellness at ALA. She does hands-on work with students to help them excel through the rigorous school while also protecting their mental health. She is a registered counselor and certified life coach. Prior to teaching mental health at ALA, she was the student life manager at African Leadership University, where she managed residential life and operations. Mr. Bradford, Ms. Mtembu, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
It's great to be here, Charlotte.
So my first question is for Mr. Bradford specifically. So you founded the African Leadership Academy, a boarding school for exceptional young leaders around the African continent. Can you tell me a little bit about your journey to this school?
Sure. Really wonderful to be here. And I think the important thing to know about me, you already said in the bio, which is that I've always been interested in educational institutions and in this question about what makes schools great. I believe that great schools have a clear mission and a shared values that cause them to form what we call an intentional community. And that allows for powerful networks to be built out of those schools over generations. So after some time spent studying and working in different schools, I became very, very interested in the work of building one. And you mentioned that I previously worked at a boarding school in England. And at this school, there were a pretty large number of African students, but that school's mission was about developing English gentlemen, and had been doing that for 450 years at that time. And I wondered, I think with good reason, whether many of those African students at that school would come back to Africa after they graduated and after they finished university. I think the experience of being sent off when you're 13 years old to a school that's truly great, but focused on turning you into an English gentleman, will probably turn you into an English gentleman. And as I spent time in Africa, I saw amazing opportunities that the students that I taught each day had the potential to be the leader to address, whether it was a chain of small-scale health clinics or power generation or high-quality, affordable private schools across the African continent. And I wondered who would tackle those problems if it wasn't the students that I was working with. So I decided to go to graduate school. I was focused on building educational institutions. And shortly after I arrived, over 16 years ago, I met a classmate from Ghana. And he and I have been working together ever since. And so we started by building African Leadership Academy, first with a very clear mission, which was about developing leaders who would shape Africa's future, then defining clearly a set of values that would anchor our community. And then finally, clearly and carefully defining a curriculum and a student experience that would foster the type of community that we wanted to build. So ALA is a place where promising young Africans come from all over the continent, and they come together to develop African solutions to African challenges and to build the continent on which they seek to live and work, rather than the one that I might build. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm so excited about developing leaders who will craft the continent in their image.
Thank you so much. And that really makes sense to me. I think I learned so much there from my fellow African students. And I think that leadership styles were, I learned so much about different leadership styles and sort of how that can completely change the world that we're living in. So I'd really like to hear a little bit about life at ALA before Corona hit. And I can imagine there are high anxiety levels now due to both classes and Corona, but What was the level of anxiety that you noticed before it even hit?
I think the best person to answer this is Mandisa. She's at the front lines of questions of mental health on campus.
Yes, of course.
Cool. So I think it's a great question, thinking about anxiety before the coronavirus hit. And the short answer is yes, there were levels of anxiety before the coronavirus hit. Some of our students did struggle more than others. Anxiety levels increased in term two at our school for several reasons. I'll just focus on two. For our second year students or our senior students, term two is about continued college applications and college results. Mm-hmm. And so as you can imagine, speaking and planning for the future is anxiety provoking. And at times, this is even more true for young people with a mission to not only improve their own lives, but also leave a positive footprint on the African continent.
Mm-hmm.
Our first year students struggle with a bit of anxiety as well, because for them, the pace of learning increases. They move away from sort of adjusting and figuring out how ALA works, and they start being asked to take initiative, to step into leadership positions. For example, our first years are able to run for student government elections in term two of their first year. And so all these, this growth curve that they go through at this point is certainly anxiety provoking.
Mm-hmm. So you would know better than anybody this. You said that some students were struggling more than others. The students that were struggling, did they reach out for help?
Yes. I want to believe that students who were struggling to manage the anxiety did reach out. And the evidence that we have, or we're basing this on, is that our students are provided with three support structures. One is the college counseling office,
mm-hmm.
which gives our students support structure to think about college, to apply to colleges, and sort of break down the process into a manageable experience for them. And then there's faculty advisors who also help our students think about using the college process and even just the ALA experience as an opportunity to learn about themselves, reflect on the traits that they're developing, and in the many ways in which they're developing as leaders during this time at ALA. And then, of course, there's our department, the Health and Wellness, which has a suite of counselors. We've got counselors and psychologists in the team, and we even have relationships with psychiatrists outside of campus. And so, mm-hmm. looking at our data and looking at the number of students who come in voluntarily or even through the referral of a staff member, we see that students who are struggling have definitely come forward and asked for help and received the appropriate help.
Great, thank you.
I might add something there. As I heard Mandisa talk, I was thinking about why are ALA students willing to seek help around these things on a continent in which there's actually tremendous stigma around mental health.
Yes, I definitely noticed that on campus.
And so, you know, if students are willing to come for help, why is that? And I think this comes to foundational community building work.
Mm-hmm.
That happens at the start of school. When you arrive at ALA as a first year student, you are on campus for over two full weeks before you have really gotten fully into your academic curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
And that period of orientation, I think, is really important for people to come to terms with and discover a new way of working and a new kind of home environment and gain comfort with the types of supports that have been built around them, which Mandisa, I think, just very clearly described. The typical student who comes to ALA is coming out of an environment where they were the best. And suddenly they're coming into an environment where actually they are going to feel maybe strangely for the first time incompetent or incapable. mm-hmm. in ways that they've never felt before. But that's a shared experience. And I think that that the team does an amazing job of scaffolding that experience for students and creating safe spaces to build trusting relationships with adults and have the kinds of conversations that are so important to reducing anxiety levels.
Completely. And that was sort of, that goes into my next question, which is really, if they didn't choose to go to staffalty for help, did either of you notice that students would go to each other? And did they find support systems in one another?
Absolutely. We have student leader groups on campus, like the peer counselor program and the residential assistants. And so, and we get a lot of referrals actually for our department through those students. So, we see peer referral for mental health and even medical services sometimes. Mm-hmm. And students definitely, and I think that even informal peer counselors or support systems that students create amongst each other. And so when you ask a student in a counseling conversation, who makes up your support system, students will always list two or three friends on the campus.
That's great.
That they go to.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. So my next question is that when I first walked into ALA, I noticed that it has these fundamental pillars, one of which I really appreciated was collaboration. So Mr. Bradford, could you please talk about the other pillars of ALA and how they might be a part of decreasing anxiety levels on campus?
Okay, so this is a really wonderful question. And I think, again, all credit goes to the ALA faculty for carefully building and defining a curriculum that would allow each student to ALA, each student who leaves ALA to embody what we call our seven traits. And those include things like ethical decision-making, entrepreneurial and design thinking capability, collaborator, as you've mentioned, but also communicator, critical thinker, Africanist autodidact. These are a set of traits, each of which has a set of defined standards that we hope students will reach, because we believe that if students master these traits, that they will have a skill set that will prepare them to succeed not only in university, but in life beyond, as they are working in organizations and building organizations that will address major challenges on the African continent.
Mm-hmm.
So, your question then frames these around anxiety in a way that I hadn't necessarily thought about before. So I think there are two of those traits that are particularly interesting in this regard. So one is, as you said, collaboration. What we try to encourage at ALA is productive exchange and really recognize the value of teams and the idea that by bringing diverse perspectives and experiences together, we can actually create better solutions than any of us could come to on our own.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the byproducts of focusing on this trait of collaboration is that you have a less competitive campus than you might find elsewhere. I think our students are regularly working in teams and regularly supporting each other's successes in their work. And I think competition, unhealthy competition, is one of the things that can really breed anxiety in school settings. But I think the other trait that we focus on intentionally that's particularly valuable in this context in reducing anxiety levels and generating self-mastery is this idea of autodidactic. So definitionally, an autodidact is someone who has learned how to learn, right? They are able to define a goal clearly and map for themselves a path that will allow them to gain the skills and knowledge they need in order to achieve that goal. And I think about the true autodidact is someone who has developed self-mastery. They understand themselves. Mm-hmm. They're able to articulate their aspirations. They understand their stressors. They can make plans and separate between short, medium, and long-term goals if they fail at something.
Mm-hmm.
They can figure out how they can work around that failure and pick themselves up such that they can still achieve the long-term goal that they have set. And as students grow as autodidacts, I think what we see is that they begin to practice the kind of physical and mental hygiene that allows them to proactively both identify and manage the sources of anxiety in their life. And you know, this idea of mental hygiene is one that Mandisa really taught me several years ago, but is one of actually one of my favorite things that we think about at ALA, because I think it's something that schools need to do a much better job thinking about and talking about. And I think we're able to do that within our autodidact pillar, as you said.
Yeah. I really appreciate
that. Is there anything about mental hygiene that you would want to add?
I'm going to try to respond before I say something.
No, I'd love to hear that, because mental hygiene is actually a term I've never heard before, but it's definitely something I would want to learn more about. So please.
Yeah, well, I won't say much, but it's better the idea that brushing your teeth is something you're taught from the age of four, right? But no one teaches you to name your emotions, learn how to manage them until you're like 25.
Yeah.
Right? So it's getting people to think about mental hygiene or being mentally healthy is as important as not having gingivitis or not knowing how to take care of a scratch when you fall off your bike.
Yeah.
It's just the idea that we need to teach people how to take care of their emotions and their mental health from an early age, because that health is just as important as physical health. And the two actually are quite connected. And so it becomes quite, interesting to think about how human beings have always prioritize physical health. Meanwhile, physical health and mental health are so connected that and we see it, right? If you're anxious, you feel it in your body, your tummy hurts, you have a headache, you have neck pain or muscle pain. So clearly the two are connected. And so that's what mental hygiene kind of comes from, the angle it comes at.
I so appreciate that, because I think that it also sort of helps get rid of the stigma around having trouble with your mental health if from an early age you learn that mental health is just as important as physical health. So I think that I love that term. I'm definitely going to start using that. So thank you.
I didn't coin a guy named Dr. Guy Winch came up with it. He's got a great TED Talk.
I'm definitely going to watch that later. And I think the other part of that conversation, which I really appreciated, was that idea of collaboration, because I know from my time at ALA, I would say that I had 25% individual work, 75% group work. And that taught me so much about how to be a good group member, how to be a follower, and how to be a leader. And it sort of got rid of that really competitive aspect of school, because you felt like you had a team behind you. So I appreciated that too. So at this point, I'd like to sort of switch topics a little bit, because we are in the middle of this pandemic and everything is changing around the world and at ALA. So just so listeners can hear, could you guys please tell me a little bit about how ALA has responded to coronavirus, such as what do classes look like now and how are students able to interact with one another?
Great. So I think I'll start with just the question about how ALA has responded to coronavirus, right? And I think, we became very worried quite early in this pandemic for its potential ramifications for Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, we started to have meetings as a leadership team around coronavirus in early February, once a week.
Oh, wow.
Because we wanted to make sure that we were ahead of the prospective issues that could come with it. And what ends up happening with something like this is it accelerates so rapidly that you can very quickly become reactive rather than proactive. And, one of the things that we talk about as a core sort of self-leadership trait at ALA is this idea of proactivity And I think as a leader within the ALA ecosystem, one of the things that I really try to make sure that we catalyze in the face of something like this is proactivity. So how are we planning well in advance of what could happen, such that if we are faced with some of the challenges that we have since been faced with, we're prepared to respond.
Mm-hmm.
I think the second thing is, when you are then defining your actions, how do you allow your mission to lead the work, right? So at ALA, our mission is to enable lasting peace and shared prosperity in Africa. And the way we do that is by identifying, developing, and connecting future leaders. So if we are to lead with our mission, right, and lead with example, it dictated us to make a few important decisions. The first important decision that we had to make was closing our campus to visitors once there were a significant number of coronavirus cases in Africa, mm-hmm. and asking our staff to begin working from home. Right? The second important decision that we had to make was actually closing school in the way that we knew it, because school as we knew it was a place that gathered. And one of the things that was very evident that was central to good public health policy in the response to a pandemic is this idea of physical distancing, right, and eliminating gatherings. And ALA could lead in that regard by ending its traditional assemblies, which have large numbers of students gathering at once, or even ending the typical classroom environment in which students are coming together in significant numbers. So we needed to close the school of ALA as we knew it. We needed to reinvent that school experience. But what we did not do as a function of proactive planning was try and rapidly send every student home across Africa.
Yeah.
We determined that that would not be a good decision, right, for two reasons with respect to our mission. The first is, while traveling, one of our students could potentially contract the virus and be a carrier that took that virus from Johannesburg, a community where the virus had been demonstrated to exist, into a community in Africa that was less prepared to respond. And we were very, very concerned about the possibility of us undermining our own mission by becoming carriers of a catastrophic pandemic that could reach into all corners of Africa. And so rather than mandate all of our students go home, we kept the residents of ALA open. We sent students who were from South Africa home. And we sent students who were immunocompromised to host families such that they could be in very small communities and closed environments. And then we moved our school online such that all of our students could continue to take courses and continue to make progress toward their diploma and toward university and beyond. I think the final thing is that an ecosystem like ALA does not rely only on people who live on campus.
Yeah.
It also relies every day on wonderful human beings who come from communities around ALA to help prepare our food, to help keep our campus clean, to help look after our buildings and our grounds. And to the extent that in this period of shutdown, while the residence was still operating, we were going to have those contractors and colleagues coming to campus, one of the really important things we had to do with respect to our mission was make sure that we could reduce the risk for all of those contractors as well. And so one of the decisions we made was to repurpose all of our school transportation and use that transportation to bring our colleagues from their communities into our school such that they didn't need to take public transportation, which is a potential mode of transmission of the virus.
Yeah.
So to date, you know, we have not had a case of coronavirus or COVID on campus. I do believe that in pandemics, the question is when rather than if. And I am confident that we've created policies, whether it's quarantine or other things, that can give our community the best chance of not serving as a petri dish for the virus when that happens. But we also need to make sure that we're continuing to practice all of the safety practices and hygiene practices that that are central to good public health at this time. And we also have to make sure that we're encouraging and fostering community at this time. And that includes ensuring that students are interacting with each other, having productive class environments. But also, I think one of the most exciting things that's happened in recent days has been just this blossoming of conversations between students and alumni. We've created a global speaker series that happens on Thursdays that students and alumni and admitted students can all attend. Last Friday night, we had an open mic night, which had 9 or 10 of our alumni musicians performing from where they were across the world, and including some of our students. You might know Malkia, the band.
Yes.
Second year girls. And so, you know, we had 368 members of our community dial in to that open mic.
That's so exciting.
Which is awesome. And it's a reminder that, you know, we need personal and emotional connection now more than ever.
Yeah.
In a time in which we're physically distant. And I hope that as a community, we're stepping up to the challenge of creating those types of experiences such that everyone can be healthy physically and mentally in this strange time.
Great. Thank you. And I mean, off of what you said last, I am curious how ALA has changed in terms of student anxiety levels since Corona became really serious. And I know a lot of students, based on bans from their own country or changes in the borders, aren't necessarily able to return home. So how has that really changed anxiety levels?
Okay. I think I can answer this one.
Yes, thank you.
I think since the virus began affecting the continent and South Africa, we definitely saw anxiety levels increase in our community. And this includes students. Students have expressed concern for their families and friends across the globe. And the virus has changed their day-to-day lives. And so there's definitely been an increase in anxiety levels, understandably. But I think, as Chris mentioned earlier, we prioritized keeping our students safe and keeping the virus out of our campus. And we also took all the right measures to keep the virus out of our campus, but also to be able to respond should, if and when one of our community members contracted the virus. And so students saw all of these measures being put in place and began to appreciate that staying on campus was actually keeping them safe, but as well as their families.
Yes.
Because traveling is one of the top risk factors for contracting and or even passing on the virus. We also have made it possible for our students to stay connected to family members back home, and so through maintaining our essential services such as Wi-Fi,
yes,
and just telephone services, so students have been able to call home and just one connect with their family members. But also realize that be able to assure their family member that they are okay and that they are doing well under the circumstances. And so this is definitely on a long way to alleviate anxiety because we've given our students pragmatic ways to reassure themselves and support each other. And so our students have been a lot calmer in the last 2 weeks. We've definitely seen, as I mentioned earlier, we've seen the stress level, the anxiety levels sort of flatten, where they did peak a little bit at the start of the lockdowns and the increase in numbers.
Great, thank you so much. And I know that ALA is a really rigorous school in terms of its curriculum. So I was also wondering, during this time, how are you balancing people protecting their mental health while also completing their schoolwork and also protecting their physical health, which it sounds like ALA has done a fantastic job of. So how are you sort of balancing all of this at the moment?
Yeah. So I think the emotional hygiene and physical hygiene conversation comes back here.
Yes.
First, we've made sure that the physical health services are available and continue to take place on campus. Our clinic is operational. The clinic, the matron and the day nurse come in every day. So that way we are making sure that students are staying physically or medically healthy. And then in terms of mental and emotional well-being, we've also kept our counseling team on campus as well as available for emergencies. And so students who were, for example, in a counseling process with the psychologist have been able to continue those sessions with no interruption. And students who have opted in or who felt the need to opt in for counseling sessions now have also been able to do that.
Great.
Very seamlessly. We've been able to create social distancing counseling rooms for students who want to have in-person sessions. And we are also taking advantage of the free telehealth service online platforms that are allowing for, you know, continued privacy in the sessions, but also connecting through remotely with our students. We've also, so as Chris mentioned, our boarding house continues to operate, and a lot of my colleagues have remained on campus, and so they've continued to be, to provide parental support to our students as residential faculty. And this has kept the community spirit and just the communal sort of like foundation of our work going, because students realize that they still have the trusted adults that they were living with in January still on campus with them,
mm-hmm.
Trying to find a new normal, trying to make things work during this time. And then also our student leaders have also stepped up in an impressive way right now. Students have taken up initiatives, the 21-day physical exercise challenge. Our RAs and PCs are doing socio-emotional check-ins with their peers, and just keeping that community spirits alive, and also prioritizing mental health and emotional health during this time.
Mm-hmm.
And then lastly, as Chris mentioned, our very famous assemblies have continued. Which
I've tuned into some of them.
I think for me, that is the highlight of how well we've handled this sudden change in our way of being, but keeping the things that are, you know, core to our being as a community. Because
yeah.
Dialing in on a Monday afternoon to assembly and finding 200 plus people there as well just kind of makes you realize that the human spirit is just fantastic.
Yeah.
So our students stay connected to each other, and now we're connecting with alumni, with alumni, faculty. So it's just, we were really prioritizing staying socially connected, physically healthy, and emotionally hygienic practices to help our students balance their mental health and physical health.
Great, thank you.
I think the function of we've now had 3+ weeks, right, to work on these things, right? How do we reset routines to ensure that we maintain our physical and mental health? And I think it hasn't always been easy, but I think that we have settled into those routines largely. And I think now the question we need to be asking as a community is a different one, which is how do we help share our relatively healthy and privileged position? How do we use this for good?
Mm-hmm.
In a time of coronavirus, right? And so one of our students reached out to me this weekend saying that she wanted to try and create a video campaign in which all of the students at ALA shared basic coronavirus information and basic public health information in as many African languages as we have on our campus, which is probably 75 or 80, such that we can actually create some viral messaging that can go through WhatsApp into different communities to help people understand lessons that maybe in the South African vernacular languages are well distributed, but in the languages of the Democratic Republic of Congo or of Niger are not necessarily well distributed today. And we have, I would argue, not only an opportunity, but an obligation to think about what things like that we could be doing with the human potential that we have, given that we've figured out how to first look after ourselves and each other.
That's a fantastic idea.
So I'm really looking forward to seeing what will come.
Wow.
Yeah.
I think that it's so amazing that you guys were really able to grow a community in the time where it feels like communities are supposed to be set, or communities have to be physically separated, but you guys are still able to grow this online community is really impressive. And again, that kind of leads me into my next question, which is for Mr. Bradford, is that when I was still at ALA, in one of your speeches, you discussed the difference between social distancing and physical distancing, and how we can still support one another during this time, even though we cannot physically touch. So could you please tell the listeners more about this?
Yeah, so I think there's a linguistic challenge that we face right now, which is that there's a term that we use to describe a public health practice. And that term is social distancing, right? But what that term is really imploring us to do is keep physical distance.
Mm-hmm.
We should stay 2 meters away from others. We should not gather in large spaces. Right, we must be thoughtful about ensuring that we are not transmitting a virus. And in this time of physical distancing, actually what we need to prioritize for our mental health and for our underlying humanity is social connectedness,
mm-hmm.
and social cohesiveness. And so how do we actually think explicitly about connecting with others at this time, and with our family and with our friends, both on our campus, but also far flung across Africa and around the world? I think that we have a unique opportunity, actually, to remind ourselves during this time of coronavirus of how central social connectedness is to what makes us human.
Yeah.
Because as we're all resetting routines, and as the world is working from home and taking classes on Zoom, right, we can think about how we build into our routines a moment to just check in with a friend, an opportunity to have a chat, a chance to have a cup of coffee, but over a Zoom call or a WhatsApp call in the morning with mm-hmm. a friend. And I think one of the amazing opportunities of this time is actually recognizing the importance of this connectedness and being more deliberate about bringing it into our lives. Because when we do, I think what we will find is that we are more healthy mentally, less anxious than we might have been before, because we're more grounded.
I love that, and because I think one thing that I've thought about a lot with this virus is, in a time that you're so scared, it seems really sad that I'm walking down the street and the people that I would normally hug when I run into them move to the other side of the sidewalk. And it's what we have to do to stay safe, but it's also really difficult to think about. So I think really defining the difference between physical distancing and social distancing is so important. And that was something that, after I heard your speech, I brought that back to my family, and now we use physical distancing whenever we're talking about social distancing. So my last question, which is definitely open for either of you to answer, is that in my time at ALA, I learned about the ethical philosophy of Ubuntu, the idea that I am because we are. So could you talk a little bit about how we could apply this framework into supporting one another during the time of Corona?
So, Charlotte, I am from the Zulu tribe in South Africa. And so Ubuntu is actually a Zulu word. Mm-hmm. It's also found in three other languages that are related to Zulu. And it means, you know, it sort of has this meaning around like, I am because you are, right? And helps us to think about compassion and humanity. And I think an English phrase that comes close is, no man is an island, right? Mm-hmm. We're all interdependent. So when I read your question, I sort of thought about how can Ubuntu help us to, you know, during this time and to continue even physically distancing and doing the hard thing, like staying at home and respecting lockdown laws, for example. Mm-hmm. And I think it's being able to think about that our existences are interdependent, that flattening the curve of this virus is dependent on all of us practicing Ubuntu. Staying at home, washing our hands, sanitizing, all of these behaviors, we are not doing them just for ourselves. We're doing them for our families, we're doing them for our grandparents, we're doing them for our neighbors, we're doing them for our neighbors across the globe. So being stuck at home isn't, we shouldn't think of it as a negative thing, as, oh, I'm stuck at home, but we should think about it as, I'm keeping other people safe. Mm-hmm. By physically, by limiting my going outside to the shops, I am keeping others safe. I'm keeping those who are more vulnerable than I am safe. And so I truly believe that it's the spirit of Ubuntu that will help us tell the story of how we survived COVID-19, even when we're no longer around.
Yes, definitely.
I agree. I couldn't say it better. It is the perfect philosophy for these times.
Yes, I've been thinking about it a lot, and I've actually been reading some more about the Ubuntu ethical framework, and I think that it's definitely something that if I had a large platform that I would definitely want to share, because I think that it's so hard to think, oh, like I'm stuck at home, and I've been reading all of these articles of people saying sort of, why are we stuck at home? To protect a small population of people? Why are we stopping the economy? But it's really about everybody protecting each other. And I've also seen a lot of, you're not stuck at home, you're safe at home. And I think that that's something I've thought about a lot. And even though this time is really crazy and really difficult, I feel so lucky to have the ability to be at home. So I think that brings us to a good place to stop. I'd just like to thank you both one more time for being here and giving me your time. I think that this is going to be really helpful for people, and I just really appreciate everything that you've done. So thank you. And I miss ALA, so thank you to both of you for creating a space that made me so happy there. It really is a fantastic school. And I'm sad to be gone, but I hope I can be back soon.
We're sure we'll see you again soon, Charlotte.
We look forward to it. Thank you again.
Thanks, Charlotte.
Thanks so much.